Hello, I'm James Sandy, and this is The Unseen Swerve, a digital paella of the creative and artistic from Birmingham and beyond. This time around, we explore racism, poverty, and growing up with local author Sean Cole, who talks openly about the subject matter of his new book and the relevance of Black History Month.
This is Switch.
So I'm joined now on the programme by Sean Cole, a local writer, who's going to talk to me about his new book, excitingly entitled The Road to Redemption, Full Circle. Now, Sean, firstly, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much for having me. Much appreciated.
It's great to have you on. Now, let's start with talking about you. It's all about you, Sean. We'll focus on your kind of background to start with and how you, I suppose, how you came to writing. Let's talk a little bit about that to start.
Yeah, okay. So I'm Sean, obviously, as you stated, I'm from Birmingham. Writing wasn't, in terms of the book, like writing a book, it wasn't the first experience I'd really had with, you know, creativity or anything like that. My first passion was actually music. So when I was younger, you know, rap was my thing. It was the thing that I fell in love with, the outlet that I chose to chase. And, you know, it went okay. I'm not going to say, you know, it was absolutely incredible. I'm not Jay-Z or anything like that. But it was nice. It was a nice experience. And for me, I think the thing for me about it was therapeutic, because my kind of writing, as you'll probably tell when you read the book, it's kind of conscious. It's conscious. It's, you know, getting things off my chest about things in life. And I've never been like the kind of bling bling kind of person, you know, wanting to talk about jewelry and money or anything like that. Like, you know, I'm not really interested in those kind of matters. So, you know, when I was making rap music, for the most part, you know, I was trying to put out a good message out there. You know, like one of my big idols in music was Tupac. And as you know, he was definitely somebody who was an advocate for change in the world. So that was always the way I was trying to go with my music personally. And yeah, as I said, I did that for many years.
Was it the case that writing kind of rap and rap music, it's very lyrical, very, you know, very wordy. Did that lead you to creative writing, or was it that you had creative writing that you thought, actually, I could put this to music, and, you know, and eventually you've kind of, you tried both. How did it work that way?
Well, I think I thought about this now when I was back in school. And it's quite funny now when I think about it, because I'd say I started doing music first. But when I was in school, I actually did do a biography, an autobiography, as one of my projects for GCSE. And I also wrote a short story as well. So I've only realized this when I've thought back on reflection. But I guess realistically, I've always just had that, you know, creative mind where I've just wanted to tell stories. I've always just wanted to tell stories, and that's whether it's through music or through me writing books. Like, I'll be honest with you, like, I used to think at one point, if I had the opportunity, you know, I'd like to act if I could do that. And, you know, obviously not to just say I just want to jump into a show. I'd obviously want to do all the necessary training to get to the best that I could be to do it. But, you know, I've always just had ideas for films, for example. I've had film ideas that I'd like to do. You know, this book that I've now done, making music. So I've just always had this kind of this creative spark, I suppose. So I've just tried to look at the many different ways in which I can show that off and express myself. But again, with this story, it's all about the message in the story. So, you know, that's what I really try to hit home with the most stuff I do. I mean, obviously, we're human beings, so you are going to have times where you're upset. You're going to have times where you're happy. So, you know, a lot of your thoughts might be contradicting. For the most part, I think when you overall look at like the kind of thing that I do in terms of, you know, whether it's music, books, film, like there'll always be the stronger message there being to think about your actions and really think about the decisions that you're going to be making in life and the impacts that things that decisions can have in life. And just trying to make a better world, you know, just trying to make a better world overall.
It's interesting you talk about writing autobiography at school, because obviously some people, a lot of people, leave it till a lot later in life. I guess what you're trying to get to with a lot of your writing is purposely you're trying to write from quite a young perspective, aren't you? You're trying to talk about not just youth, but I guess kind of
some growing up, coming of age? Is that where the book starts? Is that where the idea comes from?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in this book now, Nathan, the main character, he starts off as a teenager. He's 13, and the book follows him well into his adult years. So it is definitely a thing of trying to explain the journey. And I suppose I can do that a lot better now because I'm older myself. So it's not me. You know, sometimes maybe when you're younger and you say certain things, it can maybe sound a bit like, why are you trying to sound older than you are? Like, you know, you're no older than us. Like, why are you saying this or why are you saying that kind of thing? But because I'm a bit older now, I suppose I've got more life experience where I can basically say, look, I've been through this kind of thing, or I've seen this kind of thing, or, you know, I mean, I've experienced these things. So I'm talking from a bit more of a knowledgeable background and a bit more from wisdom, you know, and it might be taken a bit more seriously.
Yeah, I guess what you're describing is perspective, really, I guess, isn't it? You know,
exactly.
The book, The Road to Redemption, Full Circle, as you mentioned, the kind of key character is a young black lad called Nathan. And there are a lot of issues in this, Sean. There are a lot of kind of, you know, issues which I think relate to a lot of young black men growing up, particularly in the UK, but wider, around, you know, around issues of racism, perhaps that's ingrained, that's institutional, that's casual, that we'd hoped had gone away a long time ago. And there are issues of mental health and violence and drugs. It's all in there, isn't it? And I think you describe it as a kind of a vivid picture. And it is, from what I've read and from what I've heard you reading from the book, and we're going to have a sample, excitingly, from the book later on in the program. It is very stark. You know, you're not shying away from taking on some big issues with this book.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's exactly it. And, you know, I think sometimes if you really want to show people the reality, you've got to just tell it how it is. You know, I think if you try and sugarcoat it, especially with like these kinds of issues, because let's just say I kind of held back a bit, or I commercialized it kind of thing. If people read that, they might then come back with an opinion from the book of, oh, well, it doesn't seem like it's that bad. You know, like, why, you know, why do people complain? Like, for example, like, you know, if I sugarcoated mental health or sugarcoated racism, like, oh, that doesn't sound that bad. You know, like, I don't really get what the big issue is here. So to really tell the picture, to tell the story, and to really let people understand, like, just how it can feel, like, you've just got to be as direct and as blunt about it as possible. So I've tried to, like, hold no punches with the story. And, you know, the one thing I will say about this book is, even with the main character, no one in the book is exempt from being held responsible for their decisions, even the main character. So there will be consequences for decisions throughout the whole book, and that's what you'll see. Like, there's no stone left unturned. Nobody kind of gets the easy ride or anything like that. You know, when there's bad decisions made, bad consequences will occur. So you will see that. And, you know, the thing that I've tried to show with this as well, the hope in one of my aims for this with young black youth is, you know, if they read it, I want them to see just how bad things can get if things do go down the wrong way. It's trying to show them that, hey, this might seem cool, it might seem good at the time, but you haven't seen the other side of it yet. You haven't seen where it can go. You're only seeing at the moment the positive aspect of it. You're only seeing, you know, the fast side of it, the quick side of it, the glamorous side of it. You're not seeing the whole picture. So yeah, I've tried to be as direct as I can with the message. And that's what I hope, like, you know, kids can pick up from it, you know, because I'll be honest with you, you know, yes, the main character is black, but poverty can be for anyone. Do you know what I mean? Anybody can come from poverty. Anybody can have financial issues and stuff like that can affect them. So it's not even just for black youth, you know, it is just for youth in general, but specifically black youth, as they obviously are a lot more prime to these kind of situations and these kind of circumstances. So can you relate when you don't feel safe? Because these racists judge you like everyone's the same. So tell me, can you relate? Can you relate? Seeing problems in the world that you want to try and change, so can you relate? Can you relate? Kids carry guns and blades so nobody feels safe. Tell me, can you relate? Can you relate? Where the actions of a small few define a whole race, so can you relate? Can you relate? When you want to get away from this messed up place, Can you relate to seeing people on the streets begging for some change just to get something to eat? While we're living in our houses in comfort and with heat, they're laying in a bus stop for shelter to sleep. So can you relate to me living under pressure because you're stuck chasing a dream and you'll only have true happiness when it has been achieved? So you work hard every day praying that you will succeed. Can you relate to being worried of police? How does a stop and search lead to ending up deceased? And while some officers accept responsibility, it's a bitter pill to swallow when they always walk free. So tell me truly now, can you relate? Wanting peace in this world, no more anger or hate. Fighting just to try and make this world a better place, using voice and a song, hoping you can make a change. Can you relate? Can you relate? Seeing problems in the world that you wanna try and change, so can you relate? Can you relate? Kids carry guns and blades so nobody feels safe. Tell me, can you relate? Can you relate? Where the actions of a small few define a whole race, so can you relate? Can you relate? When you wanna get away from this messed up place,
I think there is a kind of sobering life story, if you like, at the basis of this book. And I was just wondering, I was just keen to get your take on, and you've just touched on it actually, that, you know, what kind of opportunities do you think your book creates in terms of that challenge and that discussion in terms of, I guess, inequality is what we're talking about, isn't it? Not just to particular ethnicities or cultures, but, you know, it's broader than that. So do you want to try and use the book for, I suppose, is the question.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I'm a black mixed race person, you know, mixed race, white and black. So obviously I can definitely relate to black people specifically. I've obviously had my own struggles in that sense. So of course, I definitely want to try and uplift my people, my culture and whatnot. It is a thing where, as I said earlier, like my message, my whole vision of the world for the most part is unity. And I don't like this whole segregation that we've got going on and, you know, racist attacks, the violence, everything. Like, you know, when I see everything that's going on in America at the moment, it's really sad, man, because it does feel like we're going backwards rather than forwards right now. So yeah, with this, it's definitely a thing to look at, and it's to try and, one, like you say, address these topics. Maybe these can be things that, you know, can bring out think pieces and, you know, conversation points, things that can be discussed about this, you know, even like maybe in schools, that kind of thing, you know, something that could be used in schools to kind of address certain storylines out of the book, certain situations, etc. But yeah, for like the most part, definitely in terms of trying to just, one, unite the youth, because at the end of the day, as I said, poverty doesn't know a skin color. Poverty doesn't know a gender. Poverty is just poverty. If you're in it, you're in it. And that's what it is. So rather than thinking about a segregation, we're all in the same boat. Rather than us battling amongst each other with this crabs in a bucket mentality, how can we help each other? How can we uplift each other so we can actually grow together out of this situation rather than, hey, I'm just trying to get out myself and I don't care about anybody else. This is just about me kind of thing. And doing it in like a more selfish manner, just more of a community kind of effort. Maybe that could slowly bridge the gap and lower poverty overall, because it's more of a joint effort rather than the odd person managing to get through the gap.
Now, I might be wrong here, Sean, but the title of your book kind of suggests that there could be further installments. Now, I haven't read all of it, so I don't know, kind of, and I don't want to discuss an ending because I don't want to spoil it for people, but The Road to Redemption Full Circle, it kind of suggests to me there could be more? Are you planning more? Are you thinking more?
So in all honesty, when I wrote it, I didn't have any intention to write another one. However, when I did get to the end, I realized that if I did want to write more, that I could. So at the moment, I'm going to put this one out because this is the first book that I've ever written. So this is all new to me. This is all new territory. If I was going to do more, I'd probably do another two. So yes, it is definitely possible that I could add more installments. I'm sorry to sound so vague with that, because I know if there's people who read it and really like it, they're probably going to want to know a more definite answer. But I'll put it this way. If this turns out to be a pretty good success, and when I say that, I'm not just judging that by the value of money. I'm not going to become a millionaire for me to write another one. I just mean, like, if the impact of it is good and the feedback from it is good and people really enjoying the book and, you know, it is being used for the purpose of why I've written it, then I think that will definitely give me the inspiration to add to another one. But, you know, even if I didn't write another Road to Redemption, even if I didn't write another Full Circle, I've got other ideas. Like, I've already got a different idea for a completely different book. I've got about two or three, to be honest with you. So, you know, it might even be that I just come with a whole other book on a different story.
Excellent. Now, we are, as I said, we are going to have a selection from you reading a chapter of your book, which is great that you've done that for us. And have you got plans to do audiobooks and radio things? Is that something that you perhaps look at exploring with this? Because very often these days, you know, books are audiobooks, aren't they? You know, they're always released in sort of tandem, aren't they, with a kind of a spoken word version. Is that something you're working on as well?
Absolutely correct. So that is definitely something that I am currently looking into. So I did look on a website just in regards to how it all works and whatnot. It's definitely an option that I want to explore. You know, when I was looking at it, I'm not going to lie, some of the prices were seeming a bit steep. I'm kind of looking at the moment and seeing if I can do it myself. But this book is like, it's mine, you know, it's kind of like my baby now. So I think, to me, it'll probably be a really big accomplishment if I could actually do the audiobook myself, because I know, I wrote it, so I know what to say, how to say it, when to say it. I know how I want it to come across, you know. So I'm not saying that I could always do it better than anybody else, but I just feel like, because it is my book, it would feel that much more special to me if I was the person who actually narrated it. So yeah, I think I'm going to definitely be looking into that.
Excellent. So finally, Sean, let's just tell folks listening where they can find The Road to Redemption Full Circle, the new book by Sean Cole. Where should we go to get hold of it?
Okay, if you want to get it, it's on Amazon. Right now, it's exclusive to Amazon. So that's the place. Just go directly there. If you just search Sean Cole Full Circle, it'll come up straight away. So have a look. I'm not sure if it'll come up in just the general charts yet, because it's not actually been released. So I'm not sure if it'll be coming up in like the general search listings in that sense. But if you just search my name, Sean Cole and Full Circle on Amazon, I'll be there.
Excellent. Well, Sean, it's been great to talk to you, and it's been great to have you on the show, and I wish you every success with the book, and hopefully after that success, you'll come back and talk to us about whatever's next.
I'd be very grateful to do that. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sean.
And now, as promised, a sample of Sean Cole's new book, The Road to Redemption Full Circle, read exclusively by the author.
The bus ride takes for what feels like an eternity. Especially when all it leaves me with is my thoughts that dwell on what could have been with my dad if he took that job, and my insecurities making me feel so unworthy of this school. As we pull up to Woodgate High, my eyes widen in awe. This place is like a fortress. I finally start to feel some desire to want to stick it out here. I run to the front of the bus before the other students even have a chance to get out of their seats and jump off the steps. "Wow," I say out loud, as I try to keep my composure. "This place is incredible. The funny thing is, these rich bastards aren't even fazed by this kingdom of learning. They don't even appreciate how great this is." We'll spend the morning being given the grand tour. I've never seen such a big building in my life. It's got everything, from the indoor sports ground and swimming pool to the modernised library and science laboratory. After the tour, we get sent into our classes for the year. My class teacher, Mr. Thompson, introduces himself.
He asks the students to do the same. Nothing major, just get up, say our name, where we live, and a little something about ourselves. I get up and give my introduction. It's a little awkward, but I think I handled it quite well, all things considered. I can see a few funny looks from some students though. Then, we get our daily timetables and tasked with some learning activities that encourage group interaction. It's clear that they're trying to help the students to communicate and build relationships. It doesn't work very well though, for me at least. Before I know it, the day has flown by and I've barely learned anything. I just keep thinking about this place. It still hasn't sunk in. Not a single friend has been made though. I guess I'll be riding this alone. It's all good. I've always been a loner. The final bell of the day rings and I snap back to reality. Okay, class. Thank you for your cooperation. It's been great meeting you all, and I look forward to teaching you, Mr. Thompson says, as we all get up in a rush to leave the class. He seems cool enough, the type of teacher that actually cares about his students. As I walk down the halls, I think about how different this is to my junior school, and realise how deprived I really was. I continue walking, but get sent flying halfway down the corridor, and almost fall to the floor after taking an aggressive push from a fellow, and I use that term loosely, student. Nathan Jones, your ass is mine. Who the hell are you? I reply, shocked yet angered. You don't need to know who I am. All you need to know is I'm going to kick your ass, he yells angrily. Oh yeah? Well, I'm right here. I knew this was a stupid thing to say for two reasons. One, he has two other boys with him. I'm clearly outnumbered. And two, I knew as soon as I said that I was potentially throwing away my future at this school. But the anger I feel is overwhelming, consuming. I can't let this go. No matter the odds or the consequences, I will not back down. I clench my fist and start walking towards the boy who pushed me. He also starts rushing towards me. My heart is racing. Yet I don't feel fear. The rage burning inside me soon relinquishes that mind ideology. Barry, stop this now, a voice says. I turn and look to see a boy standing alone by the lockers. Jack? Don't get involved, man. This has got nothing to do with you, Barry says. But he almost seems intimidated. Oh, but I think it has, Barry. See? Nathan here is a friend of mine, Jack says sternly. What the hell? I don't even know this guy. He's your friend? Talk about low standards, Jack, Barry says embarrassingly. No, Barry. Low standards is trying to intimidate someone when they're clearly outnumbered. So tell me, is it because he's black? Or is it because you're scared he has superior intelligence over you, which means poor old Barry will be showing up by the black kid? I guess either way it boils down to him being black, right? Jack says while looking Barry right in the eye. He shouldn't be here, Jack, and you know it. He's lucky you're his friend. Next time I may not be so kind, Barry replies while looking at his friends for validation, hoping he's safe face. Hey Barry, I'm right here. Don't talk to Jack. Talk to me. I ain't scared of you, I shout at the top of my lungs, hoping I've provoked him enough to get a reaction out of him. Just give me a reason. As I stare into Barry's eyes, showing no sign of fear or surrender, I suddenly hear rushing footsteps coming into the hall. What's going on here? Are you boys fighting? Mr. Thompson says authoritatively. Ah, Mr. Thompson. Why did it have to be you of all people? I guess I've blown my chance of you giving a damn about me in your class now. Barry Hilltop? What's going on here? Mr. Thompson says with a distinct look of disappointment on his face. It's him, Mr. Thompson. Nathan keeps trying to harass me, squirmed Barry, his whole demeanour changing instantly. He's lying, Mr. Thompson. I saw it all. Nathan did nothing wrong. He was provoked, Jack says calm but firmly. Who is this guy? And why is he defending me? Okay, Barry, Nathan, both of you come with me. I think we need to have a word with your parents separately and try to sort this mess out. Dad's gonna kill me. As I walk with Mr. Thompson, I notice Jack is following us. I've got to say, from first impressions, for a white guy, he sure supports the black cause.